Good morning. Today's daf of Mesias Mem Dalet. We're in Mem Gimel Amud Beis. We're starting with the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud, the last final Mishnah here of the third perek. Achoshev l'shoach habepikadon. So you had a thought, and your thought now is that you're going to be mishalech bo yad. So under normal circumstances, so the Torah does not put any capital into what you think. Obviously, the thinking is what begins every process. In other words, every process begins with a thought. But in other words, there's normally no culpability on the thought itself. I guess notable exception would be the issue in the Torah of Lo Sachmod. But even that's a worthwhile conversation, which we're not going to have right now. But Achoshev L'Shoach HaBepikadon. So someone gave you an item to watch, and you're looking at the item, and now you have bad intentions, you have bad thoughts. And over here, the bad thoughts is that you're going to keep the item. So Beit Shammai Amrim Chayev. So Beit Hillel Amrim Chayev Ashishach Bo Yad Shenamar Im Lo Shalach Yado Bim Leches Rei Ehu. So over here, a really basic machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel in terms of you had a machshava to be mishalech bo yad. So according to Beit Shammai, that's it. Now you are now going to be chay ba'onis. Meaning up until this point in time, you were a shomer. A shomer means that you would be pater ba'onsit. But now that you had a machshava, so now you're chay ba'onsit. Good. So that is the shita of Beit Shammai. Meanwhile, the shita of Beit Hillel is that no, in other words, the only culpability, the only time that your liability moves up where you're going to be chayv and onsin is only when you actually are mishalech bo yad. The next line of the Mishnah now, according to Rashi, is an independent halacha, not related to the previous point that we just made. He says, achavet v'natal imen revias v'nishbara. So let's say what you do is that you had a barrel of wine that was kept by you, and what you did is you took a revias, you just took a single quarter of a log of wine, a fraction of the barrel. So Eina Mashalim Ella Revius. So at that point in time, you're only going to be chayiv on the Revius, meaning what you didn't do is that you didn't do a hagbah by the barrel. So in order to be kona the barrel, meaning you're mishalech boyad, but to be kona the barrel, you have to pick up the barrel. You didn't pick up the barrel. All you did was tilt it on its side. That's not a hagbah. And so, therefore, the only chayfus is going to be on the revius. Now, higbiv and natalei men revius v'nishbar misham demekula. Contrast that where you do hagbah, where you pick up the whole barrel. You pick up the whole barrel in order, but you only take a revius. Nevertheless, you're going to be chayiv on the entire barrel. In other words, your shlichus yad now is going to go on the entire barrel. Okay. So far, so good. The Mishnah, that was the final Mishnah of the Perek, and a short discussion here in the Gemara. Minahani mili. We had a machlokus, the first part of our Mishnah brought down a machlokus between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel regarding machshava. You had a machshava to be mishalech bo yad. Beit Shammai says you're chayv, Beit Hillel says you're pater. The Gemara goes through the back and forth. Minahani mili. The Braisa goes through the back and forth. Detan Rabbanan called Davar Pesha. Beit Shammai Omer Melam Mishachayv ala machshava. So Beit Shammai takes a look at that pasuk and he says, ah, machshava. Now you go back to that pasuk. Where did you see where did you see machshava in the pasuk? So it's a little tricky, but it's there, and it's in the word davar. So I'll call davar. So davar could be also understood as dibor, and dibor is just simply words, meaning that you had a thought. Now from the Gemara, it sounds like that the thought, even according to Beit Shammai, by itself requires a verbal articulation. In other words, the thoughts floating around in our head, even Beit Shammai will tell you. What I'm saying is not mochrach, and I could be wrong over here. Well, I always reserve the right to be wrong. But it sounds a simple pshat over here in the Gemara and in the Braisa is just those thoughts floating around in our head. So even Beit Shammai will tell you that you're not going to be liable for that. The liability comes about when those thoughts are expressed and articulated. That's the dibor. And Beit Hillel Amrim Minu Chayv Ashir Shach Bo Yad. Now, all that was the Shita of Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel, on the other hand, says, no, you're going to be chayv when and only when you actually do it. The culpability and liability comes with an action. In fact, it's pretty clear in the Pasuk. Im lo shalach yado, meaning you actually have to take the item. So Beit Shammai's response to Beit Hillel is a simple, yeah, I hear you, but did you hear me? A kol davar pesha, that's a dibor. Amalem Beit Hillel Beit Shammai v'alokvar nemar im lo shalach yado b'mleches re'ehu. And Beit Hillel says back to Beit Shammai, yeah, but did you hear me? Meaning, I'm also citing the pasuk, that you're mishaleach bo yad. Right? It's pretty clear. In other words, and basically, the back and forth over here between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is that, look, in the pasuk itself, it's not clear. Meaning the Torah does focus on the dibor. The Torah also focuses on the yad. Action, thought. Im ke matam alam ra'kol davar pesha, ishi yachol ein lo. Ela hu. Amar lav de l'shucho, minayin tam alam ra'kol davar pesha. And Beisol says to Beishamai, and I'm right. Meaning our position is the correct position. That really shlichus yad requires yad. In other words, it requires an action. What are we going to do with a called davar pesha? The dibur over here is a reference to shlichus, and that if I go ahead and I don't do the shlichus yad myself, but rather what I do is I deputize and I appoint somebody to do it for me, otherwise known as agency, otherwise known as shlichus. So then I will be culpable and liable when I ask somebody else to do it. Normally, what do we say? Ein shlichus dvar aveira. That's what we normally say, and then of course there are the exceptions. Now, it happens to be that right here in the third parak, we went over one of the exceptions, and that is mi'ila. We just did that yesterday. But meanwhile, today, we're going to go over another exception, and that's shlichus yad. Shlichus yad is going to be another exception in that normally we say, ein shlichus dvar avera, that when I appoint somebody to do an avera for me, so normally when he does the avera, I don't get it. I don't get the avera. It doesn't transfer over to me. But meanwhile, this is an exception. So, Mi'ila and Shlichus Yad are two of the exceptions. Gemara in Kiddushin, second parak, is where you're going to find the third. Meanwhile, let's continue. Amar Rabbi Lo Shanu. Okay, we are now moving on. We're up to the second part of our Mishnah. Okay, so the Machlokas Beisham and Beisilo, Shlichus Yad, Machshava versus Maisa. Okay, we covered it. We're up to the next part of the Mishnah. And what did we do? We tilted the barrel in order to take out wine. So he tells a chavis. Amar Rabbi Lo Shanu, Ella Nishbara, Aval Hichmitz Mashalam Es Kula, My Time Magira Didehude Ahanala. Okay, so the Gemara says like this. What do we say? If you tilt the barrel and you don't pick up the barrel, so you didn't do a Maisa Hagbah on the barrel, and you only took a revius of wine, obviously your liability is on that revius, obviously. But in other words, the rest of the barrel is not, you don't have liability on the rest of the barrel. If an ones occurs to the rest of the barrel, you're not going to be chayiv. Okay, that part's easy and clear. Where it gets a little tricky, says the Gemara, is that let's say you took out a revius of the wine, and what happens? The rest of the barrel sours. The Gemara says, that was you. You caused that to happen. What you did is that you created a vacuum in the barrel. In other words, because you took out a revius, and in ways which I can't explain because I don't know enough about the winemaking process, but the Gemara says that's gire didei, that's your arrow. That was a direct result of what you did, and as a result of that, you are going to be chayev for the entire barrel. Good. And meaning, that's not a case of ones, that's a case of you being a poshea. You're the mazik because you removed a revius of the wine. Amar Shmuel, I'm sorry, let me read the heading. He be of an atal himenu. Now, well, let's say you pick up the barrel. So now you did a shlichus yad on the entire barrel, even though what you took is only a revius. And as a result of that, you're now going to have a hischaivus on the entire barrel. Amar Shmuel, lo natal natal mamish, ala kevin shehigbia, lito avagav shlo natal. So the Gemara says now, in the Mishnah says Shmuel, when the Mishnah said natal, so the word natal is not to be taken super literally. It does when you pick up the barrel in order to take a revius of wine. One would imagine that what that means is that you pick up the barrel and you took a revius of wine. That would be a simple reading of the Mishnah. Shmuel says, yes, I know, but in this regard, once you pick up the barrel, even though you didn't take the actual revius, you are now on the hook. Your level now of liability bumps up to now being a sholeach yad, meaning you're going to be chayv anonis. Kevin shehigbia lito afa pishalonatal. So lema kasav shlichus yad enitzricha chisaron. Sorry, lema kasav shmuel shlichus yad enitzricha chisaron. And now we get to a topic that we've repeated and reviewed numerous times in this parak, and that is that we shlichus yad. In order to qualify shlichus yad, does that mean that the item that you took has to, by definition, depreciate? Yes or no? And as we saw, this is a major machlokus between Amoraim. It was introduced to us earlier in this parak as a machlokus between Rav and Levi. Right? If you remember, I do. I'm proud. If you remember, we were unclear in terms of where Rav stood on the issue. We vacillated with Rav's Shita in terms of whether or not Shlichus Yad requires Chisaron or not. Anyway, what comes out over here now is that Shmuel, who says that you pick up the barrel and that's it, you're Mishalech Bo Yad, and you don't have to take a Revius, meaning I know the Mishnah says it, but in that regard, your Hitzchayavus comes even before you take a Revius, so therefore, ergo, it must be that the Shita of Shmuel is that your that your Hitzchayavus, your Shlichus Yad is going to materialize, even though there was no Chisaron. Good. So that must be Shmuel Shita, right? So Amri Lam. So when the Bnei Yeshiva heard this, so the Bnei Yeshiva said, no, I wouldn't go that far. That's not a definitive conclusion. Shani Acha, Denichalei Tadavi, B'chavetz Kula Basus Laha Revius. Look, in other words, you picked up the barrel. And really what you want to do now is you want to take the Revius. Okay. You haven't taken it yet. It could very well be that right now, the reason why you don't want to take the Revius is because the moment you separate the Revius from the rest of the barrel, so it's going to sour. In other words, again, it goes back to the idea that the second time this morning that we're going over this idea. The barrel of wine, the wine is just simply going to be better wine as long as it's kept with the rest of the wine. Right? That barrel of wine, as long as it's full and sealed, so now all is good. So all Shmuel is just simply pointing out is that you picked up the barrel, you wanted a Revius. You don't have to actually take the Revius, but Halacha deems it as if you took the Revius. You didn't actually separate the Revius from the rest of the barrel? Right. Because you wanted preservation of your wine. The rest of the wine is servicing your wine. That's the only reason why you didn't separate the two. But the truth of the matter is that really, Halacha looks at it as if you took the Revius already.
This being when the wine is not complete, because if it's completely done, I mean, eventually you can take out.
Right.
So it must be sour in the beginning.
Okay, but the assumption is that it's there to preserve the rest. By Ravashi Higbi Arnaki Litol Heimenu Dinar. So Chamrahu Mahu. I'm sorry. Gemara now wants to know the following. What about are we going to use this idea over here regarding a wallet full of coins? Okay. In other words, I say wallet. By the way, I know I think about my wallet that's filled with paper. Okay, and that's a strange thing, but we're so used to it at this point in time that it's no longer strange, right? If the Amoraim came nowadays and they saw us with our currencies, they'd be like, what are you doing? Taking out a piece of paper, handing it to somebody, and him just simply nodding his head and saying, oh, well, good. It's good. Anyway, so Arniki, I call it a wallet just to be clear. It's a bag, because the bag is holding the money. Okay, anyway. So by Ravashi Higbe Arniki Lito Imenu Dinar Mahu. So now, does this idea of Shmuel, would it transfer over to now a bag of money? In other words, a barrel of wine where I'm picking up the barrel, but I only want a Revius, but the rest of the wine is servicing that Revius. Okay, good. We explained that. Is that also going to be true by coins? Maybe Chamra Hu Delo Minter Ela Agav Chamra. Avazuze Minter. It could very well be that, and again, if I had a say in the matter, I don't, but if I had a say in the matter, I would have said, well, no. In other words, I understand how the rest of the barrel of wine is preserving that Revius of yours. I call it yours, by the way. It's not yours, but you took it. So, but that's not true by coins. I have a bag of coins, and now all the other coins are there to preserve your coin? Oh, Dilma, the Gemara says, or maybe, Shani Tiras the Darniki, Mitiras the Dedina. The guarding of the arnicky is different than that of just standard coins. I don't know. Maybe the Gemara says, maybe, look, in other words, when I have the coins all together, just easier to guard. You have a bag of coins, and as long as the coins now are collected and contained in one area, maybe it makes your job easier. And maybe an achinami, meaning I only wanted one coin, but I prefer it in the bag because it's just easier to guard. Okay. So, and maybe coins are going to be the same as a barrel of wine. Take the Gemara is good. Good question. We'll leave the question unresolved. Ad kan, the third parak of the Masechta. And now let's just take a breath, a deep breath, before we begin over here, the fourth parak of the Masechta. So where are we in terms of the daf? So here in Bav Metzia, so where we are is that we are covered now, Prakims 1, 2, and 3. Perek number 1 above Metzia, it's a good time to just, you know, take stock. So in Perek number 1, we talked about monetary disputes. I grab a talus, you grab same talus. We come into base and both of us hands are holding the talus and now it is Maman Amuta B'Safek. What do I do with Maman Amuta B'Safek? So effectively, that's what we discussed in the first Perek above Metzia. Perek number 2, the Mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. You find a lost item and you have to return it to the owner, and we went through all the details of finding the lost item, simanim, care for the lost item, compensation for the care that you put into taking care of the lost item. That was all Perek number 2. Perek number 3, which we just concluded, Shmira. So I'm asked to watch an item, entrusted to watch an item, various degrees of liability. When do I have an exemption? When do I have a liability? What if I opt into making myself liable even though the Torah exempts me? I pay for the item even though I'm exempted. Am I going to be able to get derivatives from the item now that I paid for it? Right, that was the first sugya in Perek HaMafkid, Kinyan HaKefal. Am I going to be able to now receive the Kefal benefit now that I paid for the item even though I didn't have to? And an assortment of other Shmira-related topics. That was the third Perek of the Masechta. And now we begin Perek number 4, and obviously it comes right after Perek number 5. Smartest thing I said so far today, by far. And now 4 and 5 are normally lumped together because, so they have to do with money. In other words, we are now entering into the currency section of the Masechta. So Perek number 4 is going to be an analysis of currency. It happens to be, for those of you who love currency, you're going to love this Perek. Okay.
I love
it. love currency. I'm not talking about money. That we all, you know, we're all gravitating towards money, but I'm talking about the actual currency itself. We're going to have an economics discussion. And then the fifth Perek is going to be talking about lending. And we're going to be talking about legitimate lending and illegitimate lending. Right? Lending with no interest and lending with interest. And an assorted related number of topics. It happens to be that right here, on the first daf of our currency talk, we're going to blend together currency and lending. We're going to talk a little bit about lending a little bit later in today's daf. Okay. And let me just give one introductory note. Well, two introductory notes. I take it back. Introductory note number 1. When we talk about currency nowadays, so we live in a very easy world, right, where we know what currency is, right? As I just joked moments earlier in today's daf, I go into my wallet and I take out this piece of paper. So it's green and it's got a picture of a past president on it. And I hand it to somebody and he looks at it and he's like, oh yeah, of course. Good. In other words, then we both have this understood agreement and acknowledgement that that is currency. And that $10 bill is in fact a $10 bill. And we know exactly how much it's worth and how much its value. And it is a means of currency where I can go ahead and buy whatever commodity and product that I want. Okay. And now it's even easier. Because now we don't have to even give the piece of paper. In other words, so I hand the piece of the plastic, and we all understand. Good. But in other words, obviously the plastic is just going to be built on this idea that we all have this very clear understanding of currency. It's clear. It's a very easy world that we live in, right? If this Perek were written nowadays in our world that we live in, my guess would be, not because I'm right, I'm guessing, this would be a much shorter Perek. Much. It's my true belief, right? We live in such a world that's easy currency. What makes our world more complicated is that we got competing currencies. Okay, but for our purposes right now, I get to ignore that. I don't have to think about competing currencies, right? But in other words, for those of you who know, I'm not one who does. There are currency markets, and you can exchange currencies. And okay, but that's well beyond my. That's well above my pay grade. Okay, so but back in the good old days, so in other words, you had minted coins and the currency were minted coins. And we've expressed this idea numerous times, and I'm sure when I introduced the fourth Perek of Bava Metzia in the previous rotation, I'm sure I said the same thing. I'm sure I did. And that is that back in the good old days, so the currency was the coins, and the coins currency was based on the fact that A was minted and B, it was actually the metal content of the coins that had the value of whatever it expressed. So in other words, you had silver coins, you had gold coins, you had copper coins. And all that was a function of because I have now metal content in the coins, so it's the metal content in the coins which expresses it as a currency. Plus, it was minted. I mean, you can't ignore the fact that it was minted. That's an important aspect to it as well. Once it's minted, now it's going to have a liquidity and a stability, where now I give it to somebody, and he's like, looks at it, and he's like, okay, good, good. Okay. What's going to make this perek hard and challenging, and let's be honest, is that back then you had competing coins. You had gold coins, you had silver coins, you had copper coins. Okay, and now you'll ask me, what's the currency? Well, if I take a silver coin, which as we're going to see in today's daf, is the most liquid and the most stable, I take a silver coin and I go to the market and I buy fruit. I buy apples with that silver coin. Over there in that exchange, it becomes super clear that the coin is the currency and the apple is the commodity. That's easy. Where it gets tricky now is that, let's say I'm using silver coins in order to buy gold coins. What's the currency? What's the commodity? That's where it's going to get tricky, and that's where we're going to be spending the entire remainder of today's daf. The opening sugya here of Perek HaZahav is going to be an analysis of when exchanging coins one against the other, which one's the currency and which one's the commodity. Now, let's go to introductory point number two. Who cares? Okay, so and the answer is actually really simple. Halacha cares whether or not which one's the currency and which one's the commodity, because here's what we all know. We've gone over this point time and again, and it's such an essential point here for the fourth parak of the Masechta. And that is that when we're doing a transaction, so you have a commodity, I have a currency, I'll give you the currency, you give me the commodity. When did the kinyan occur? Here the answer is super straightforward. The kinyan occurs not when I pay for it, but when I take the item. Meshicha. In Kedushin, we hammered this point. And so over here, we get to hammer it again. Meshicha is the kinyan. When I give him the money, so that does not concretize the sale. I know that's strange, right? In other words, you think, right? Money talks, right? Money does a lot of things. But in terms of a kinyan, we all know this. Meshicha is the kinyan. So obviously, when we identify which is a currency and which is a commodity, so that's going to help us in terms of establishing when did the kinyan occur. So when I give the silver coins in order to buy the fruit, so me handing over the silver coins, that's no kinyan yet. When I take the fruit, there's a kinyan. And oh, by the way, as long as we contract for the purchase, and I say contract over here, right? Contract doesn't mean that we have to write it out on paper. But as long as we contract to the purchase where I say to him, I want to buy your fruit. And he says, great. And we agree. And I take the fruit and I haven't paid for it yet. A kinyan has occurred. Of course, I owe the money. But in other words, by me taking the commodity, a kinyan has occurred. So far, so good. With all that stated, okay, now let's all brace ourselves and let's all begin. Hazav kones hakesef, hakesef eino kones hazav. Okay, so now gold will acquire silver. Silver will not acquire gold. Outside of the context of our discussion, an impossible line of Mishnah to understand. In the context of our Mishnah, in the context of our discussion, it actually makes all the sense in the world. I have a gold coin, I have a silver coin. And what I'm doing over here is I'm doing an exchange. And again, by the way, don't think of it as a currency exchange. Okay? It's yes, you're exchanging coins, but don't look at it the way like our modern markets look at, where I'm exchanging a shekel for a dollar. That's not what we're describing over here. What we're describing over here are just simply different coins, all produced by the same government. And now what I want to do is instead of, hey, I got all the silver coins, I want a gold coin. So what I'm going to do now is we're going to have an exchange of silver coin for gold coin. Which one's the currency and which one's the commodity? Our Mishnah teaches us the silver coin is a currency, the gold coin is a commodity. Okay. And what establishes currency versus commodity? So the Gemara is going to be using two terms to describe a currency versus a commodity. And that is chashuv, charif. You will write the two ches. Two cheses? Yes. Two cheses. Chashuv and charif. So charif over here is basically, if I may, charif means basically it's liquidity. How readily acceptable it's going to be in any given market, right? So I go to the fruit market, I go to the housing market. In other words, once I flash my silver coins and everyone's like, oh, good, right? let's go. So in other words, that's charif. And chashuv means that it's significant. In the context of currency, I planned and prepared, but I really don't know the best English word to describe it vis-a-vis currency. But those are the two terms that we're going to be hearing in the Gemara, chashav and charif. So over here, when I have silver versus gold, silver is currency. Silver is more chashav, silver is more charif. And now, if, let's say, Serge and I are now going to have an exchange of silver coins and gold coins, and now, Serge, you have those gold coins, I got my silver coins, and now I give him my silver coins, has a kinyan occurred? No. Those silver coins were currency. If I took the gold coins before I gave him the silver coins, has a kinyan occurred?
Yes.
That's what the Mishnah is teaching us. Okay. Now, all that is great. Now consider the next line of the Mishnah. Nechoshes kones kesef, v'kesef eino kones nechoshes. And we're going to say the same thing regarding nechoshes kesef. Copper, silver. Copper coins, silver coins. Again, the silver coin is the currency, and the copper coin is the commodity. So when I'm going ahead now making the purchase of and the exchange of silver coin, copper coin, we're going to say the same thing. Silver coin is more chashav and more charif, and so therefore, in exchange of silver and copper coins, so the person who is taking the silver coin, right, let me do it like this. If I first give you the silver coin, all I did was just hand over to you the currency. No kinyan yet. If, on the other hand, I took the copper coins, well, I took it. You gave it to me. So now I took the commodity. Kinyan has occurred. Okay, good. So far in our Mishnah, what does it sound like? So it sounds like Kesef is king. Okay, give you a good alliteration for today.
Gold is king.
Okay. So the Maos Aros Konos is the Yafos, Vayafos, and the Konos is Aros. Okay. And now, and oh, by the way, right, the part of what makes our Mishnah so difficult to digest is that it's clear in our Mishnah that just because something is a coin doesn't by definition make it a currency, right? That is an incredibly important point, which, again, if you're new to this, if this is the first time you're learning the fourth parak of Bava Metzia, I have to admit that's going to be a little bit challenging. Because a gold coin, you mean to tell me that a gold coin is not a currency? Of course it is. But once I have the gold coin relative to the silver coin, so now, in that exchange, the silver coin, that's a currency. The gold coin, that's a commodity. Right? You see? So I'm totally acknowledging that the challenge over here is just simply to be able to open up our minds, expand a little bit, that sure, a gold coin obviously is a currency, but not relative to a silver coin. Okay. And the Maos Araos, Kornos is Yafos, V'Yafos, and the Kornos is Araos. And so now, let's say I have good coins, bad coins. Okay? Now, I didn't say Bitcoin, and I'll let somebody else school me on whether or not Bitcoin is a good coin or a bad coin. But I don't know nearly enough to have an opinion on it. But the Maos Araos, as far as the Gemara is concerned, is coins that are no longer in currency. Right? They're not current currency. Okay, back in the good old days, so coins and currencies were in date and became outdated. Okay, based on whoever is the local government at the time, whoever the reigning emperor at the time is. Okay, we don't have to know all the historical details. All we need to know is such a phenomena existed, where coins just simply became outdated. So now, Maos Araos, Konos is the Yafos. So now we do an exchange of an outdated coin and a indated coin. Not the right term, but I guess it makes sense. Yeah, up to date. Up to date coin. And now if I do such an exchange, so what's the currency and what's the commodity? This one's easy, right? The currency is obviously the up to date coin. And the outdated coin is now a commodity. I want to buy an outdated coin. Who knows? Whatever. So there, that's easy. The outdated coin is a commodity. And again, when we do the exchange, so if I hand the up-to-date coin, so has the kinyan occurred? No. If I accept the outdated coin, has the kinyan occurred? Yes. It's again, once you know the principle, all the applications are easy. But the principle, I have to admit, is hard. Asimon kones amadbea. V'amadbea kones asimon. Let's say I have a coin that's not minted versus a coin that's minted. We do that exchange. This one's, again, easy. The Asimon, right? I made the same joke 7.5 years ago. Okay, do you remember the Asimon? Of course I do.
All the other
those of us are old enough.
I understand. You have to be of a certain age. But in other words, right, you had a string. Some people made necklaces. Right, some people made necklaces out of it. Oh my gosh. And then you made calls and okay. Anyway. See the daf 7.5 years ago and go review all my Asimon talk. But anyway, the Asimon is the unminted coin and the Matbea is the minted coin. And now I do an exchange of those two. That's a no-brainer. The Matbea is the currency. The Asimon is the commodity. And see above. And Metalton Konas a Matbea in a Konas a Metalton. At this point in time, like the Mishnah left the easiest examples for the last. So now, right, the hardest examples is silver coin, gold coin. That by far and away is the hardest examples. And now we do an exchange between a coin and a fruit. Okay. At that point in time, it's like it's whatever. It's straightforward. And call Metalton Konas Zedzeh. Now Metalton are going to acquire one another. Rashi says, please wait. We are going to we're going to explain more of that in the Gemara. So Rashi says a little bit more than that, but anyway, I will ask that we wait till we get to the Gemara to explain that line of the Mishnah. Right? We have in parentheses that cloud belongs, it doesn't belong. I noted it. Moving along. Ketzad. And now all this now, just let's look at that practically how it would all play out. Okay. So the Mishnah just simply illustrates. The way it would look is as follows. We are now going to do an exchange. I'm in the market. I'm going to buy fruit. Okay, it's an exciting moment. So now, if I hand him the money, can we retract on the kinyan? Of course we can. Because again, kinyan is not done with the money. The money obviously pays for the item, but that does not concretize the kinyan. So therefore, can we retract? Sure we can. If, on the other hand, he gives me the peros, even though I haven't handed him the money, can we retract? No, we can't. Kinyan has been done. So far, so good. Aval Amru. But they said, meaning the Chazal, Chachamim, told us the following. Mishapara, me'ashidora mabo, midora flaga, so hu asid lihi pareya, mimisha'ina omed b'dibura. The Mishnah just warns us. You made a verbal commitment. Obviously, we're about to transact, and the transaction obviously starts off with a clear communication between buyer and seller, seller and buyer. I'm going to buy that. Good. Now we need the concretization. Okay. But once we verbally agree to something, to back out of a verbal agreement, the Mishnah warns us it's just not going to be good. The one who has extracted payment from the Dor HaMabel and the Dor HaFlaga, so meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and obviously it was by design that we mentioned the Dor HaMabel, Dor HaFlaga. I'm not going to go through it now, right? He has over here, he quotes the Tosfos HaRosh. Anyway, but the one who extracts payment from him, so in other words, he will extract payment from you. You renege and go back on a verbal commitment, so even though technically, legally, halachically, you have not purchased the item as of yet, but once you made a verbal commitment, you really should be standing by your verbal commitment. Adkan, that takes us through the Mishnah and the remainder of today's daf is all going to be focusing on gold versus silver. Now again, I'm saying gold versus silver. Please remember that the gold over here are gold coins and the silver over here are silver coins. And even though they're both currencies, but when I put them against one another, so when they compete, so our Mishnah told us silver takes on the role as currency and gold takes on the role of commodity. So now, Masi la Rebbe la Rebbe Shimon Berei, Azav Kones HaKesef. And so now, we get a little window into a scene where Rebbe's teaching his son. Rebbe's son is Rebbe Shimon. Rebbe Shimon Berebi. And so, as Rebbe's teaching his son, so what does he do? He goes and starts off the fourth parak of Bar Mitzvah. And he starts off with the first four words of our parak, right? Which is, Azav Kones HaKesef. Gold acquires silver. Okay? And again, out of context, like I said when we learned the Mishnah, out of context, it's impossible to understand. You have to understand it in context. And that is that we're doing an exchange of gold currency and gold and silver currency. And now, because I'm putting the two against one another, silver takes on the role of currency, gold takes on the role of commodity, and so therefore, when I give the silver over, a transaction has not yet occurred. That's just the mos. But when the gold is transacted, and the gold hand now switches hands, kinyan has occurred. Good. That's our Mishnah. We taught it. We learned it already. And now Rebbe's just teaching his son. And now, Amar Lei, so Rabbi Shimon, the son says to his father, Rebbe. And many pick up on the idea that the son is calling his father Rebbe, as opposed to dad. Okay. Actually, he's got a lot to speak about that. But meanwhile, Shanita Labi Al Dutacha Akesav Kones Azav. You know, this is not the first time that we're going over the Mishnah together, the fourth Perek B'Metzia. We did this earlier. And when you were younger, and obviously when I was younger as well, so we learned, you taught me Kesef Kone Es HaZahav. You told me the exact opposite. So it's fair to say now, I'm confused. So, V'tachso V'tishna Allah B'ziknusecha Zav Kone Es HaKesef. And now, in your older years, so what happened? Meaning you flipped. You said Zav Kone Es HaKesef. Okay. So when I have a standoff between a silver and gold coin, so which one takes on the role of currency and which one takes on the role of commodity? So now Rebbe's son notes to his father, so I remember in our earlier years, you told me that gold was a currency in the standoff. And now, as you're older, more advanced in your learning, so now you're flipped. What's going on? So Bialdu say, so the Gemara goes on to explain. My Savar, Viziknu say, my Savar, Bialdu say, Savar, David Chashiv Havitiva. Okay, so I told you the key words over here in terms of identifying and defining what is a currency are Chashiv and Charif. Now, Chashiv again translates as significant. Okay, that's the best I got for you in terms of how to describe a currency. So when he was younger, he thought, Dahava de Chashiv Havitiva. Gold, silver. Gold is more chashev. So therefore, it will take on the role as a currency. And the pera, the commodity, goes ahead and concretizes the acquisition. Good. But then, as Rabbi got older, so now, what do you think? He thought the following. Kaspa Dechariv havitiva, dehava delo chariv haviperiv, kind of like perilativa. But then, as Rabbi got older, so then he said, "You know what? What's going to identify currency? I'm no longer going to use chashivas as my defining word of currency, but rather I'm going to use charifus. Charifus is basically its liquidity. How? And again, liquidity also is not the best word I know, but." Right? How accepting people are going to be when I flash them this, right? I go reach into my wallet and I take out. So again, and as I pointed out in my introduction today, nowadays it's so simple. You reach into your wallet, you take out a $20 bill, and everyone's like, "Oh, currency! Yes, yes, go ahead, make the purchase." So as Rabbi got older, so he left the world of chashivas and he entered into the world of charifas. Charifas is really going to be what is going to be defining a currency. And now gold versus silver. Silver is more charif. Therefore, silver takes on the role of currency. Amar Avashi ki al duse mistabra. Okay, and now, what the Gemara is going to be doing for the remainder of today's daf, it's just one topic. It just happens to be the Gemara is going to be spending an amud. And truth be told, tomorrow as well. So more than an amud. But we're just going to finish up today's amud. Which position is more mistabra? The youthful Rebbe position or the elderly Rebbe position. When I have an exchange between gold and silver, gold coin, silver coin, which is a currency, which is a commodity. In Rebbe's youth, the gold was a currency, the silver was a commodity. And in Rebbe's advanced years of learning, the silver was a currency and the gold was a commodity. Beautiful. Which position seems to be more defensible? I'm Ravashi ki aldu sam mistabra. So Ravashi says, I'm going to go with gold being the currency. Why midiktani? Hanechosh is kones hakesef, because the Mishnah then provided another illustration where the Mishnah then said that if I have copper silver, so silver will be the currency. Copper, the copper coin will be the commodity. So iamar bishlamet de kaspel agabedava perahave. So the Gemara says, now, if, in fact, the relationship between silver and gold is that silver is the commodity, Hainu de katani nechoshes konas a kesa dafa gavda lagabed hava pera havia lagabed nechoshes tiva hava. Rav Ashi over here is making an outstanding point and doesn't need my approbation, but making an outstanding point, which is that I can totally understand how the Mishnah then gives a second example of silver copper. Because what the Mishnah, in other words, let's assume like Rebbe in his youth. Let's assume that the Mishnah is teaching us that gold, silver, gold is a currency and silver is a commodity. The Mishnah then wants to tell us, oh, but wait one second. This is not absolute. This is all going to be relativistic. This is relative to what we're comparing it to. Silver, lagabe gold. Gold is a currency, silver is a commodity. Ah, but when I pit silver against copper, silver is the currency and copper is the commodity. That would have, if the Mishnah was making that point, that's such an outstanding point, and then I totally understand. But that, of course, subscribes to Rebbe's youth. So the Gemara says now, if the Mishnah opens up the way we have our Mishnah, like Rebbe's elderly years, which is that gold, silver, that silver is the currency and gold is a commodity, then the next line of the Mishnah is totally unnecessary. If silver is currency, lagabe gold, silver for sure will be currency, lagabe nechoshes. Consider that when I have gold versus silver, gold is more chashev, and yet silver is the currency. So when I have silver versus copper, where silver is liquid and it's also more chashev, of course it's going to be the currency. And the Mishnah wouldn't even need to teach me that point. So the Gemara says, you know, it's a good point, but I'll push back. It's derech. No, no. I'll go with our gears of the Mishnah, that's Rebbe's elderly years, and I'll still tell you it's necessary. Because Sakadat Chamina Hani Priti Basra de Sagi Inu Harifitfe. Mikaspa Ema Tive Have Kamashwan de Kevin Dika Duchta de Losagibe. So Pera Have. You could have made an argument. You could have. And you could have said that Nechoshes, you know, the copper coins, right? They're cheap. They're accessible. So many people have them. I don't know. You could have made an argument that the copper coins relative to the silver coins is the currency. And the silver coin is the commodity. You could have made that argument. And because you could have made that argument, that's why the Mishnah has to go out of its way to tell me that no, that when I have an exchange of silver, copper, silver is a currency, copper is a commodity. Okay. Ve'af Rebbi Chia Savar Dehava Tiva Havi. So, and you know, Rebbi Chia, so he preferred the Rebbe Bialduse, the earlier version of Rebbe, the younger version of Rebbe, in that the gold is a currency and the silver is a commodity. How do I know that? Because the Ravos, if dinare, mi barte de Rebbe Chia, I'll show it to you via the following scenario, where Rav borrowed money from the daughter of Rebbe Chia. Rebbe Chia was his uncle.
That's his wife.
No. Huh? No. What? No.
Daughter.
No. Somebody else. Anyway, Rebbe Chia, this one I'm right about. Okay. The I always reserve the right to be wrong, but I'm right about this. Rebbe Chia was Rav's uncle, and so what he did is he borrowed money from his, let's call a cousin. Okay. So the so lesof yaker dinari. So the and what happened was is that the gold went up. So also coming to Rebbe Chia, so he goes to Rebbe Chia, and the and now am I able to pay back? So I'm a lay zoshlim lay tavin tkilin. So the and he said, yeah, go ahead and pay back. Now imar bishlam adavativa have. Now let's consider the following. Okay, this is and I, as I foreshadowed at the beginning of today's daf, we're going to be touching today a little bit of the fifth parak of Bava Metzia. Okay, now you borrow money, you pay back money. Right? So again, we Jews, we can't charge interest to one another. In fact, that's a Isser of the Torah. Right? Got it. So, and again, back in the good old days, so all currency were coins. So what happens now is that I borrow coins. I pay back coins. If the coins went up in value, is there not a violation of Ribbis? And the answer is unequivocally no. That is not a violation of Ribbis. Why? Because it's a currency. In other words, a coin is a currency. I went up in value. Okay. That's baked into the product. Meaning when I borrow five coins and I'm paying back with five coins, so I went up in value, went down in value. That is not a violation of Ribbis. However, In the fifth parak of Bamaseya, what we're going to learn together is saw b'saw. And that is that if we're, let's say I borrowed, not currency, but I borrowed commodity. So I borrowed five apples. So now there is a rabbinic prohibition that I'm not allowed to pay you back with five apples. Okay? And the reason why is because prices of commodities fluctuate up and down. And so now when I give you back the five apples back, so how much did five apples cost, right, 5 years ago? A lot less than what it costs right now. And so when I give you back five apples, and now I'm giving you back more. So over there, even though I'm giving you this back, the same five apples, but because it's a commodity, and because now the value of the commodity went up, so that's a violation of ribbis. Albeit, that's an issur derabbanan, it's not an issur daraisa. Sabasa is an issur derabbanan, not daraisa. So over here, so what happened is that Rav borrowed money from his cousin. And he borrowed with using gold coins. And now he goes to his uncle and he says, what do I do? And his uncle says, it's really simple. I'm sorry, but the Shiloh, what was in the Shiloh was that the value of the gold coins went up. Oh. So he went to his uncle and his uncle said to him, okay, good. How many gold coins did you borrow? Five? Good. Go pay back those five coins. Okay. It's really simple. But it's currency. But that's exactly the point. Meaning it must be that gold coins has to qualify as a currency. If it doesn't qualify as a currency and it qualifies only as a commodity, so now we're looking at the rabbinic prohibition of saw b'saw. So I didn't read it. So Amalei Zoshlam Lei Tivin Utekilin. So Rabbi Chia tells his nephew, go pay back with the coins. So Amar Bishlam Adav Tiva Veshapir. So the Gemara says perfect. So if the gold coin is a currency, so then we totally understand what Rabbi Chia is talking about. Eli Amar Peira Havelei Sabesav Aser. But if it is in fact a commodity, so now we're looking at the rabbinic prohibition of Sabesav. So, Rav Dinari Havilei, Vikevin Havilei Dinari, Nasik Omerlo, Halveni Ashi Avo Benio, Ashi Emsa Mafteach. So, I'm gonna handle this really quickly, and I'm gonna explain this way too briefly. When we get to the fifth parak, Mirza Hashem, Ayin Hay, I will explain this better. Or, let's say, I'll explain it to the best of my ability. The rabbinic prohibition of Saab Besa is when I borrow the apples and I pay back apples, but I'm paying back with apples that I did not have at the time of borrowing. However, if when I borrow the five apples, I had five apples on hand, they were just simply inaccessible to me, locked away in my storage house. And currently, right now, I don't have the keys. So then that is waived from the rabbinic prohibition of saw b'saw. Then what I'm allowed to do is I'm allowed to borrow the five apples and then I'll pay back the five apples that I had at the time of borrowing. And what the Gemara over here is presenting is that maybe that's what happened over here. Is that when Rav borrowed the money from the daughter Rabbi Chia, so what, he had money at the time. And it could very well be that gold coins are really a commodity, not a currency. Is it not a violation of saw b'saw? It's not a violation of saw b'saw because he had the gold coins at the time. Okay, beautiful. Amar Rava. Let's finish up today's daf. Hi, Tanasava Davativa Have. I'm going to show you a braisa that's of the position that gold coins are currency. How do I know that? The Tanya Pruta Shamru. So Echemishmana be sorry to call my nafkamina la kedusha isha. Good. So how much is a pruta? It's an eighth of a Italian isser. Now what do I need to know that information? You want to be Makadish a woman, you have to give her a shava pruta. So the standard coin that was popular in the day was the Italian isser. So you know that it makes up eight pruta. So now we know. Good. Now the iser echamiasim of arba bedina shel kesef lamay nafkamina lemeka chumemkar. And now an iser is a 24th of a silver dinar. Now why do I need to know that? Commercial activity. Anytime I'm making a purchase. So once again, I need to know how much those dinarim are. And finally, dina shel kesef echamiasim v'chamisha bedina shel zav. Now the silver dinar is equivalent to a 25th of a gold coin. Alternatively stated, right, one gold dinar is equivalent to 25 silver dinarim. L'mayin afkamina l'pidgin aben. Now that's helpful information regarding the mitzvah pidgin aben. Okay. And over here, if time would allow, I'd walk you through the entire conversion. Right? Rashi walks us through the entire conversion over here. I'm gonna bypass the whole how to convert the coins. For pidgin aben, here's what you and I, all we need to know. A pidgin aben is going to cost 20 dinarim.
Oh, man.
Thank you. Perfect.
I just did
which
one
is
today.
Yeah. But yesterday, right?
I did one yesterday.
Right. Fine tuck.
Fine tuck.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
He was a boy.
I sent him to you.
Oh.
Okay. It's okay.
Well,
it's good.
It came through right
before.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay. We. Whatever.
Nice. Well, that was an unusual.
We'll recap later. Okay, good. So what comes out now is as follows: 20 dinarim for pigeon aben. And now, what do you do when you hand a gold coin? So that the gold coin is 25 dinarim. So what do you get? You get back some change. You get back 5 dinarim. So iam art bishlam teva ha yemashar tan bemidi dikitz bemidi dikitz. So Eli Amar Pera have a Mishar Tana Bemida de Oker Vizol, Zimn de Mahada Le Kahana Vizimn de Mosif Le Iu Le Kahana El Shmamina Tiva Havishmamina. Beautiful. So the Gemara says now, if the purpose of the Mishnah is now to talk about currency and how currencies are relative to one another, if we are now setting the pigeon haben market to the gold coin, so what that must mean by definition is that the gold coin is a currency. It must mean that. If the gold coin is a currency, what are we going to do now? The pigeon aben is a monetary exchange. And now what are we doing? We're setting the market, the monetary exchange market, to a commodity? That's absurd. In other words, no. So absurd, no. All right. I really hammered. So, but it is. It's an absurdity. So it must be that the gold coin is viewed as a currency. So I'm just showing you, says the Gemara, that this idea of Rebbe Bialduso, that the gold coin is in fact a currency and not a commodity, so it expresses itself in many different sources. I know our Mishnah, our opening Mishnah here of Bava Metzia in the fourth parak tells us that gold relative to silver, silver is a currency, gold's a commodity. I know that. I'm just showing you that Rebbe felt in his youth the opposite, and I'm just showing you many who are of the position and subscribe to this viewpoint. Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. I think what we'll do is we'll pause over here. Machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, an explanation of the Machlokes. Okay, a little bit goes into tomorrow. Anyway, this whole discussion continues tomorrow. Okay, let's pause. Let's quickly recap. Okay, what did we do this morning? So we finished off the third parak of Bava Metzia, and we went over Shlichus Yad B'machshava. So is there going to be Shlichus Yad B'machshava? Machlok Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? Of course, Halacha falls like Beis Hillel. No, the answer is no. But it is a Machlokes. And the last point that we cover in the third parak is going to be where I do a hagbah in a barrel of wine, but all I'm interested in is just a revius of that wine. So now, am I going to be chayav on the remaining portion of the barrel? The answer is yes. Yes. Okay. And we talked about how when I have wine mixed together and the rest of the wine being servicing my revius. Okay. Anyway. The Adkan that takes us to the end of the third parak, and then what we did this morning is that we started the challenging fourth parak of the Masechta, in which we're basically going over what is a currency versus what's a commodity. Why is that important? It's important because when we exchange currency and commodity, the kinyan comes only with the taking of the peira, the taking of the commodity, and the currency, it does not concretize the kinyan. Obviously, you have to pay for the item, but it doesn't concretize the kinyan. With that stated, so then what we went over today is an assortment of side-by-side comparisons. And when I have coins, one against the other, which one takes on the role of currency and which one takes on the role of commodity? In our Mishnah, silver is king. Silver is currency. The silver coin is currency relative to gold and relative to copper. Okay, that's our Mishnah. And then the Mishnah gave an assortment of other examples, but that's the primary example of our Mishnah. And yet, in the Gemara, when Rebbe was learning with his son, Rebbe Shimon says, you know, Rebbe, when you taught the Mishnah in your youth, you flipped it on us. You told us that gold is a currency and that silver is a commodity in that exchange. And the Gemara then spent the remainder of today's daf and going into tomorrow's daf, looking at this side-by-side relationship of gold versus silver and which one is a currency, which one's a commodity. And in terms of defining currency, this is a good summary point as well. So we have to look at chashivas charifas, right? In other words, which one is more significant, right? Gold is more significant relative to silver, which then that led Rebbe in his youth to think that gold now serves as a currency. And then what changed is his definition of currency, where he looked at charifus. How accepting are people of this as a currency? How quickly are people going to make a transaction based on the fact that you gave this particular coin? Okay, good. And because that changes, he changed his definition of what a currency is. So therefore, he looked at silver as being the currency.